Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast via Sports Canada. I'm your host, William Liu. Joining me on the podcast, the first ever guest of the show back when it first launched in 2019, March, Blake Murphy of The Athletic. Blake, my guy, what's going on?
What's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing well. Look, the weather's been really nice, so it's been able to go outside every single day, which has been cool.
Getting out on that bike or what?
You know, so recently me and my partner bought a car, so we've been driving more, unfortunately. Well, I mean, unfortunately for me, I would prefer the bike. I don't actually drive itself. But no, we've been getting to go to the East End and stuff. So,
what's in the East End?
What do you mean, what's in the East End? The beaches, man.
No.
Come on.
Pick me up on your way, man.
All right. Maybe.
You drive right by me if you're heading out that way.
Yeah, I was going to say, after you get your second shot, we'll see what happens.
Soon. Summer League's happening. And then the next step after Summer League is the Raptors Republic 3-on-3 tournament.
Yo.
We'll figure that out.
First off, that's only one step down from the Summer League.
Okay. No. I would say CEBL next, and then well, maybe CEBL is even higher than Summer League in terms of
like, I was gonna say
actual basketball. Yeah. Because you get like those guys are like pros who have a couple seasons of playing and figuring it out. But I guess they're the guys that instead of it being rookies on the fringe of the G League, it's like vets who are like, okay, I'm too established for the G League kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, I heard the winners of the next Raptors Republic 3-on-3 tournament will represent Canada in the next FIBA 3-on-3 Olympic qualifying.
Absolutely.
So big stakes. Big stakes.
This is why we have you on. First off, the last month plus of the podcast, if people haven't noticed, I've really just called my friends because it's not a lot of Raptors news. Got to stretch it a little bit to get to an hour. So this is why we have you on, Blake. But also we have you on because I got to ask you, like, who is the best all-time Raptors Public 3-on-3 tournament player?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know the guy's name, but there was that one team that won 3 years in a row. So it'd be someone off that team. I will say probably the most talented team. I think the team that won a couple years in a row was called Mag 7 or something like that. I'm getting their name wrong. But if they're listening to this, reveal your best player. He's going in the RR 3-on-3 Hall of Fame.
I was going to say, we got to retire some jerseys, man. Because I think post-pandemic, a lot of people aren't going to have the same level of fitness. So,
yeah. You know. I remember the first year we did it when it was 5-on-5. Skeets had a really good tournament.
Okay.
He got knocked out by your boy in the semifinals on the way to the ship for my team. But, yeah.
Who did you have on your cool team? Because it was definitely wasn't you doing that.
No, it wasn't. It was... a guy named Mike, a guy named John,
okay.
A couple other guys. Basically, I wasn't planning on playing. And then, because I was just running and it was 5-on-5, and that one was at the Raptors practice court. So it was like needed a little bit more like admin running. And then, like, they're just like, there were a bunch of teams that signed up and a bunch of individuals that signed up, and there were like two empty spots left. And I was like, screw it, I'll play. And then ended up winning it all.
Yeah. Just like, yeah, so, I so you were Jeremy Lin, basically. Is that what you're telling me? You're Jeremy Lin with the 2019 Eric Raptors? Portland.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say lower than Lin, because there was no Kyle Lowry like whispering to me like, yo, you going to come play with us? You going to run with us?
Oh, word. That is a great story, man. First off, Jeremy had a really good appearance on All the Smoke podcast. So if you haven't listened to it, go for it. It's a really nice interview. But also, yeah, man, shout out Kyle Lowry. So Kyle does recruit, because this is a small thing that, you know, it doesn't really burn people, but, you know, every single time it's the off season, he's always like, well, you know, these guys have their own decisions to make. You know, I won't pressure Kawhi to stay. I won't pressure, you know, DeMar to resign. I won't pressure these guys. But, you know, once in a while, Kyle does recruit, you know, for special guys like Jeremy. So it's good to know.
Also, like, just I feel like just the presence of Kyle is a recruiting tool. Like, first of all, when you're on the court, I'd imagine he's very high on the list of like, God damn it, I don't want to play against this guy.
Yeah, seriously.
Like, he's so annoying. And then, like, you know, you get to this stage. Maybe this wasn't true when he was 30. But now, like, we were talking about at the start of last season, like, oh, could the Raptors get in the mix for Harden? And it's like, Kyle makes the math work. But without Kyle, a guy like Harden probably doesn't want to come to Toronto. Mm. And you could look ahead to, you know, a trade in the summer this year, or like even, you know, look at the draft and the way things could shake out. Like Kyle suddenly being like the veteran mentor that he was this past year, fourth in teammate of the year voting. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Kevin McHale, mind blown. Kyle Lowry, fourth in teammate of the year voting.
Yeah, no, that's part of Kyle's story. That's really cool. Is that like he really matured like in front of everyone's eyes.
It's also a little weird, like, yeah, the publicly caveat is interesting, because, like, I've heard stories for years about how Kyle's actually a really good teammate and does all this stuff behind the scenes, and he just, like, he doesn't like people to know for whatever reason. Like, he's – who was it? It was Norm shared in the Players Tribune that Kyle and DeMar took him suit shopping.
Right, right.
And, like, that's something that, like, Kyle wouldn't want that out there. Kyle wouldn't want out that he picks up meals on the road. I remember one time, and maybe this was just Kyle being Kyle with media stuff, but, like, he was, like, helping Pascal with his three-point shot after practice and, like, wanted the cameras turned off so could, like, he didn't – I didn't ask him about this, but, like, it seemed like he didn't want it on Instagram from the, you know, like, poor Sohail can't get a picture off of of Kyle helping Pascal with a shot. And you know, like, there's other stuff too, like he comes through those summer development sessions and like takes the new guys for hot Pilates or whatever. You know, it's nice that Kyle's finally like letting people see him as a good guy instead of demanding to have this like prickly brand just with us, just with the media.
Yeah, no, man, I miss just waiting for Kyle. I don't know. That's the small things you miss in the pandemic. This is like later in the podcast. We'll talk about this, sort of like what it's been like covering the team remotely for the last like 18 months. But I just remember the last time we got Kyle Lowry at practice, because he was hurt and then he came back. We waited like 2 hours, just like, because basically when you go to practice, you're basically waiting either in the media room in the practice facility or along the sideline of the first of the two courts. And that's it. You're just in this like small sideline space and you're holding a bunch of camera gear or whatever and mics or whatever. And Kyle, we waited 2 hours. Kyle finally comes out in this like huge camo parka and Tim's, untied Tim's, came over. He's like, you guys are losers for waiting for me. And we were like, yo, you're literally Kyle Lowry. You're coming back from a month long injury. We got to talk to you. No, but I mean, no, but this is Kyle's really... You know, I mean, what Kyle does for the Raptors is what you do for fellow Raptors reporters. So, you know,
I don't think that's true.
And, you know, listen, you did put a lot of people on. So let's talk about actual basketball for a while. Look, I want to talk about Gary Trent and I want to talk about the Raptors rookies this season. But first, let's talk about the playoffs. I think the number one topic on everyone's mind right now is
Cameron Payne.
It is Cameron Payne. Absolutely, right? Because
Raptors trade Quebec City legend Cameron Payne.
Another player that Masai Ujiri missed on, just like how he drafted Bruno ahead of Jokic. I do love these. It's really funny when you can point these things out. Shout out Cameron Payne. No, but I mean, the real question is like, is Brooklyn just this dominant where we're like, you know, this is obviously a super team, but it's like, maybe it's not a super team that we saw and viewed with that sort of same fear as other super teams in the past. because what they've done to Milwaukee through two games, of course, Milwaukee are frauds or whatever, right? But like most people expected this to be a very competitive series, has not been competitive. They're literally down 50 points as if Bruno was out there. My question is Brooklyn out of reach the way maybe, let's say, the KD Warriors were?
No, I don't think so, just because, you know, we've seen how quickly wins can change, right? And, you know, Milwaukee has not looked anywhere as good in these first two games as, say, the Raptors did against Milwaukee when they got down 2-0. But things can change quickly, right? You find the right adjustment, or there's an injury or a rotation tweak, and things start to fall into place differently. Now, having said that, I am overwhelmingly confident in Brooklyn pulling out this series. I think Philadelphia has looked pretty out of sorts against Atlanta, and, you know, Embiid's health is obviously a big question. And then, you know, the West, if we're knocking off Denver, like Denver with MPJ playing well and Jamal Murray healthy, is a much different story than Denver right now.
Right.
And like, as good as Phoenix is, I don't know that, you know, I still don't know if there's that like league-wide fear in Phoenix. So, you know, it's kind of, I would imagine like the average person is looking ahead to like Clippers, Nets as the potential team that could stop them there. But the Nets are crazy good, man. And I think, you know, super team, they're an interesting team to discuss the super team thing around, because they haven't had James Harden for most of this time in this playoff run. And Kyrie and KD is still super team ish, and DeAndre Jordan, sorry, can't believe I left them out.
Well, come on.
But I think what the Nets have nailed better than any of these other so-called super teams, and they managed to pull this off even with having to trade real assets for James Harden, is you look at all their complementary pieces and they all fit, right? Like you look at the Lakers and to a lesser extent the Clippers and even some of the Bucks guys when you get outside of 6-7, and it's like, okay, you tried to get guys, but like, what is the cohesive idea here around Giannis or around LeBron and Anthony Davis? And obviously, you know, health was the biggest factor for the Lakers, but they also had like a bunch of old guys and a bunch of guys who were just like unplayable come playoff time, which really closed that margin for error. You look at Brooklyn, and Joe Harris is such an obvious offensive complement as just like, hey, if you're going to have to pay attention to Kyrie and KD, you know, here's this unbelievable shooter who can get really open and at least, you know, is not a complete, you know, turnstile on defense. And then you look at a guy like Bruce Brown, and it takes some creativity to figure out how you use Bruce Brown with a group like this. But, you know, you look at what he does defensively, and then it's like, okay, if he can do whatever with him offensively and make it work. And you can kind of go down the roster like that. Like Nick Claxton is like, he's such a good example of how, you know, even if you find one of these raw, long athletic bigs, if they have like a little bit of playmaking juice to them and they don't, you know, when you're using Claxton in screen and roll, or he comes down with an offensive rebound or whatever, that doesn't stall out your offense or lead to a turnover, you know, that's such a multiplier skill for the fifth guy in your rotation. So, you know, Mike James is another funny one where like, if James Harden is healthy, Mike James has no place playing right now, but he's almost like this.
Nah, he's Mike James Harden at the moment.
But yeah. He's Pacific been great. Mall James Harden. But so I really like how Brooklyn's built around these guys, and you know, if every team is healthy, like maybe they're not the favorites. We'll see. Like the size is a bit of their ability to play against size, a bit of a question mark, especially with Jeff Green down. But like Blake Griffin's been way better than he was in Detroit, which is funny, but like really meaningful too. So I don't know, you can go up and down the roster like that. And it's a lot of role players who fit a specific role rather than stockpiling like guys who have had a good playoff series before and are 35 and will sign for the minimum. So you know, the tax bill is not going to be friendly for them probably, and it's going to be hard. Like, you're going to run into kind of that thing where all these guys are going to want more money, and like Dinwiddie's a free agent and you might not get anything for him and all that stuff. But for right now, they're built really well around Kyrie and KD. And obviously if Harden's back, I don't know, man, I don't know how you defend that team if Harden's back and is even like 80% healthy.
Yeah, no, it's look, this team is first off just very terrifying in the moment. To your point about the salaries, yeah, it's going to be very high. So right now they're $166 million for this season in salaries. Next season that goes up to 176. Guaranteed total is 154. That's
yeah, because that's that Spencer 176 is with Dinwiddie, right?
Yeah, and Bruce Brown with the qualifying offer. I mean, to be honest, they probably qualify Bruce Brown.
They'll qualify him, but I'd guess he's going to get more somewhere else. Like he probably played his way into a chunk of the mid level or whatever. Anyway,
that's true. But honestly, like the way he's important to Brooklyn, I mean, listen, if you have all these guys here, you might as well pay the money. I know Josiah's not broke in any means. So,
and this is the thing, right? Is like if you're another team and you're trying to pluck Bruce Brown, like you're not. Even though Bruce Brown is not old, like he's only 24, he'll be 25 in free agency. You know, you're not plucking Bruce Brown to be like a piece you're building with. I don't think, because like we're seeing this year versus last year in Detroit, how valuable he is in a defined role where he can be kind of like this unique specialist, mm-hmm. like almost literally a 6'4" center on offense. He's like a supercharged Rondé from last year.
Oh man.
So yeah, I don't know, man. He's one of those guys where like, you know, we've talked about this with Lowry in the past where like, yeah, maybe teams aren't willing to pay what it takes for Lowry because Lowry actually is more valuable to the Raptors than he is to someone else because, you know, that kind of institutional knowledge and just how much he means to the franchise and stuff. Well, you have Bruce Brown, and through that, it's a little bit more of a role-based kind of endowment effect where you're like, no, he actually is more valuable to the Nets because he can play this role and they have the guys to make that possible. And he's a dock connector for them. So I don't know, man, it's look, you have Harden, Durant and Kyrie, you're always going to be in cap hell, but you're also always going to be in the time mix. So it's,
That's the thing, though. The rotation,
good problems.
The rotation is pretty solid, even beyond that. Because for most super teams, like okay, after the first few guys, like it really falls off. Like Joe Harris is locked up long term. It's a lot of money, but he's definitely worth it. They got Shamet at least for one more year at $3 million, which is he's a rotation player. Bruce Brown, you know, okay, they'll qualify him, but they have a chance to keep him if they want to. Nick Claxton as well. You got to figure Jeff Green's just gonna be on minimums the rest of the way. He'll probably stay. Like,
is Jeff Green allowed to re-sign with the same team though? Does he have to keep going to play for all 30 franchises?
You know, that's a good question. How many franchises do you think Jeff Green has played for already?
Has played for, it depends if you count Seattle and OKC as different ones.
Let's play
for
it.
The Sonics.
Let's do that. Wow.
If they're different ones, he's played for 11 different teams. 10 if the Sonics and Thunder are all one for you.
Listen, the Raptors could use Jeff Green off the bench. I feel like we've been saying this for like the last 6 years. When did he leave Boston? By the time he got to Memphis, it was like, yeah, you know, who would be good off the bench?
After he got traded for first round picks like 100 times.
That is true. Yeah, I don't understand why he kept filling so many. He
played in Orlando. From like 2011 to 2016, he cost you a first round pick. And then from 2016 to 2030, he's going to cost you the veteran minimum.
Yeah. No, this is this is unbelievable. Meanwhile, nobody will give up a first round for Kyle. Anyway, this is So, I mean, the thing with Brooklyn for me is like, I think they're the kind of super team where there's not much sacrificing for any of the guys because they're moving the ball so well together. They're playing really well collectively. A lot of these guys are playmakers for one another. And there really isn't that like, I think with a lot of super teams, you remember in recent history, there's like some small concession, like KD really wanted to play a lot of ISO, even though the Warriors moved the ball beautifully, which wasn't really a problem. That's like the ultimate first-class problem is, oh my God, KD wants to play ISO.
Yeah.
But, you know, even before that, like if you think about the Heat, like I think the way Dwayne Wade played, you know, even with LeBron, there wasn't that much shooting on the wing, so you really needed shooting everywhere else. You know, it's just like super teams usually have some small concession, but this one just fits together really well.
Yeah,
KD playing the way defensively is just like, man, it's tough, yeah, man. I think the East might be out of reach for like at least 1 or 2 years.
Brooklyn. I think, I mean, health dependent for sure, because all three of those guys,
they don't even have issues. James Harden right now, and they're just washing the Bucks.
Yeah, it's interesting because like a lot of the so-called super teams, you know, have had at least one, sometimes two dominant one-on-one players, right? Like you mentioned the Heat, And LeBron and Dwayne Wade are both guys that, like you said, they, at that point weren't established outside shooters. You know, Wade obviously like an all-time cutter, but still, you're figuring that out on the fly. Bosch had to learn kind of a new role at both ends of the floor. And, you know, I do think there can be diminishing returns to one-on-one play against modern switchy defenses, but I don't think there are diminishing returns to shooting and passing. I think it's the opposite. Yeah. And I think the more shooters you have, if you can have five shooters on the floor and all five of those shooters can attack a closeout and make the next pass, then, you know, every decision point you make on defense, you can kind of like a thousand cut a team to death on, yeah, on offense, where it's like, okay, you make a small concession to stop KD and he whips it around, and then you have to make a small concession to catch up to Kyrie, and then there's a small concession because Joe Harris has come open off the ball, and then suddenly Nick Claxton is open for an alley-oop, and that's possible because Joe Harris can dribble into floater range and throw that lob pass. Like you pile those things on top of each other, and it gets harder and harder to defend. And it's one of the reasons that, like, I, for the Raptors, like, skill number one I'm looking for if they play the big man market or they go the draft route is, like, you've got to be a guy, especially if they're going to slot you in at center minutes or like those kind of combo forward minutes with Siakam and OG. You got to be able to play dribble handoff. You got to be able to move the ball a little bit, because, you know, that's obviously not every team is going to be blessed with this level of one-on-one talent, where the Nets get down to 6 seconds in the shot clock, they're fine. They've got Kyrie, KD, and Harden. The Raptors get down to 6 seconds in the shot clock, and Fred's falling out of bounds trying to get a layup off, right? I mean, it's true. And yeah, so no, that's true. Why, yeah, you know, for a team that's in the position, a position like the Raptors, and if we're trying to take lessons from the success of a team like the Nets, understanding the Raptors can't just replicate having three of the best scorers in the world. You know, one of those things is, I think, hey, you can't have reset spots in your offense where the defense can kind of catch up. And so I think that's, you know, the Raptors have done well to manage around having some offensive limitations with a lot of their depth pieces the last couple of years. But yeah, that's a, you know, those connector skills are big. And I think we're seeing that, you know, and Brooklyn's not the only example. I love Claxton as an example of it, but I thought, you know, how much better the Celtics look when Robert Williams was on the floor this year. That's another thing where, like, you know, Tristan, I don't know what's going on with his game. I hope there's a bounce back coming for Canada. But like that just added a little bit more, and like Ayton's progression in that regard has been important to Phoenix. And anyway, I know you want to talk about the Nets and not make everything Raptor specific, but I do find myself, you know, this is our first postseason when either of us have been in this job where we can just kind of watch the postseason, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, not everything has to be what's the Raptors next game, what happened last game. You can kind of look at these big picture things. And I think, you know, it's not a secret that the Raptors half court offense has been a sticking point the last couple of years, and whatever you can pull from the success teams are having is, I think, important still.
Yeah. And one thing I want to touch on with this too, is just like when you watch this year's class in particular, it feels like offense is just clearly trumping defense. And whatever, man, like every team that's going to win at a very high level is going to need a very good offense. Right. I mean, that's just always true. But like this year in particular, it just feels like nobody, there's not that one shutdown defensive team that if you look at all of them, you would maybe think Philly, but even Philly got beat pretty badly by Atlanta in the first game offensively. You know, like it's just, does it make sense to still build a defense first team the way the Raptors have?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would phrase it as defense first necessarily, but I think that there's a certain defensive floor you have to meet. And the Nets defense in the regular season absolutely does not meet that floor. But the Nets defense in the regular season is like not the level of engagement we expect from their time. Like that's we used to do this with LeBron's Cavs teams too, that you have to assume a little bit of switch flipping. But yeah, I think, you know, I don't think the whole like defense wins championships things, it's like, obviously, like we're talking about net points, right? Like you win the game by scoring more points, not scoring X number and allowing Y number. But yeah, man, it's the modern offenses are ahead of where defenses are, and whether that change needs to come by, you know, a lot of coaches completely rethinking how we defend a modern NBA offense, or the league needing to tweak some of the rules to give defenses a little bit more freedom, you know, to stop all of these open shots that teams are getting. But yeah, it's hard to, even when you're an elite defense, like the 76ers were in the regular season, when the Hawks shoot a million threes in a game and get hot, it's really hard to do anything about that. And like, the separation between uncontested three-point shots and contested three-point shots so far in the playoffs is not super extreme. And like, that would even out over 82 games, but you don't have 82 games in a playoff series. And we, you know, if you think back to, I think it was the first sweep against the Cavs, the Raptors played well in that series, but Cleveland's three-point shooting was like so like 90th percentile hot that there was just no way to keep up, no matter how, and they were top five defense that year, the Raptors. And it's, you know, I'm sure if there were Bucks fans, they would be saying the same thing about like Fred VanVleet getting hot in that series, where it's like, okay, you can defend all you want and a team gets that hot and what can you do about it? But yeah, I think, you know, there's certainly a defensive floor, and the way I've tended to look at playoff rotation pieces is like, okay, what players contribute the most offensively that you can justify having on the floor defensively, right? So, you know, you need guys that aren't attack points. You need guys that other teams aren't just going to try to funnel their offense at, in the way that, you know, we've seen teams try to do against Reggie Jackson or Lou Williams, you know, like the Raptors didn't do against JJ Redick, and we were all pulling our hair about it.
Danny tried to do that one time, and Danny.
I'm with you, man. Like I think defensive ceiling is not going to dictate who wins the championship. I think you need a defensive floor, and then your ceiling is going to come from the offensive side of the ball. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Which, by the way, in this current, like this year's playoffs in particular, I think obviously with LeBron being out in the first round, it has felt really nice for teams with really good point guards who can set the floor, who can create. I've really noticed it's just like that really has helped. And also having a good center has helped. And obviously these are very obvious things, but I'm just saying in like previous years, there's just been a lot more of, there's less emphasis on point guards. There's less emphasis on center play. And that's been really fun to watch in these playoffs. But
Could argue point guard play is the difference in that Phoenix Denver series so far, right?
Where, like, absolutely. Aiton's, but I mean, that's a special case.
Yeah, for sure. But it's a good example still where like Aiton's been able to elevate his level of play, where the MVP doesn't have a huge edge through two games. And Denver has no healthy guards. So the fact that Chris Paul, that campaign would be their best guard, and Chris Paul is Chris Paul, becomes like magnified. I've always thought it was like a little strange that the LA teams didn't like prioritize that position beyond like trading Rajon Rondo around. But anyway.
Yikes. Yeah. Not a good year for playoff Rondo so far. But listen, there's still time. There is still time. Yeah,
still time for him. Still time for playoff P.
Still time for playoff P. Although, you know,
Playoff Norm, unfortunately.
Yeah.
RIP.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, we'll see where Norm's going to land up. Listen, I mean, he's lined himself nicely for a big payday this summer. But the other guy that Norm was traded for, Gary Trent Jr. So I wanted to reflect on this trade a little bit.
Yeah.
I guess first off, like, were there other options that the Raptors could have gone with? Maybe, like, because I think at a certain point, we realized, okay, the Raptors were going to be sellers at the deadline. They had Kyle, they had Norm. They're going to trade one of those guys. Norm, there was reports that like 20 teams were interested in Norm or something like that, or, you know, whatever. I mean, clearly he's a very good player. People are going to call about him. And it felt like the Raptors could probably get picks. And I'm sure they were offered picks instead of Gary Trent Jr. And it was interesting that they chose to, out of all those options, chose to get Gary Trent Jr. Do you think that like that was... Well, I mean, maybe obviously we don't know all of the specifics, although you definitely will know way more than me. Was this the right strategy to get a player, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, look, just about every playoff team called on Norm and had some cursory interest. And what you're running into with the Norm trade is, first of all, a whole bunch of playoff teams didn't have their own pick this year.
Okay.
So Portland's a good example. Like, maybe you would have preferred in a vacuum Rodney Hood as salary filler and a pick in the 20s versus Gary Trent Jr. ahead of restricted free agency where you're going to have to pay him more. Well, Portland couldn't offer a pick until 2023, and I don't know that you're moving Norm for a pick so far in the future, unless like you have a subsequent move lined up to use that pick as an asset, right? So you're already looking at a number of these teams don't have picks to dangle. You know, you can run through the same exercises that we did for Lowry for some of Norm's market where, you know, sure, maybe Boston should have been interested. I thought Philly was actually a good spot for him if they didn't want Lowry. Yep. And you could have asked for, you know, significantly less than Lowry coming back, obviously. But the LA teams who could have used him don't have those pieces. And to make the salary math work and make it worth Toronto's while, you know, Denver is a team that at that point, they probably didn't want to chase it more if Jamal... although I can't remember if Jamal got hurt before or after the deadline. But either way, talking about...
Yeah. Right. They had two games with Aaron Gordon and stuff, yeah.
Right. So and the Aaron Gordon trade is like, well, Denver couldn't make both of those because Harris was the salary piece and those were the assets. So you can kind of go down the list and it's like, okay, well, maybe 12 or 15 teams called on him, but like maybe it came down to Portland, Philly, the Knicks, and Dallas. I don't know.
I was going to say Dallas would have made a lot of sense. But... You know, Mark Cuban also has specifics.
Also,
Norm played in AAU. He just doesn't like AAU players.
Yeah,
he's not from the former Mavericks are another
team that they can't trade a pick until 2025.
Exactly. Yeah.
So then again, you're talking. Do you want a flyer on? You know, do you want Maxi Kleber because he's got more contract time? Do you want to take a flyer on one of the younger guys who hasn't been that impressive? I was one of the people that reported like 12 or 15 teams called on Norm and they had some offers. And, you know, the one that was spiciest and I was most excited about was a similar structure to the Gary Trent one. And then LaMelo Ball got hurt. So I don't know, maybe keep your eyes on a certain Charlotte wing. If the Raptors move on from Gary Trent and look a different way. At that position. So, but no, I think, you know, Trent makes sense if you didn't want to wait until 2023 for a pick. Trent is the youngest player on the Raptors. So it's not like, even though he's 3 years in developmentally, like his rookie season was basically a redshirt year. And it's really only since the bubble that he's like been this version of himself. So I get it. And then like, you know, it's not just Norm for Gary Trent. It's Norm and the rights to pay Norm $20 million this offseason for Trent and the right to pay Trent $15 million this offseason, say. And Trent's younger and he's going to be cheaper probably because he's RFA versus Norm being UFA. So I get it. I was a little underwhelmed with Trent when he landed in Toronto relative to how he'd looked in Portland, especially, you know, bubble Gary Trent was amazing. But yeah, I mean, he's 22 years old. He's got and he has one really good skill on offense and he needs to add a lot of the secondary stuff. Still, he's not dissimilar to where Norm was not that long ago in terms of offensive package, different stylistically, but like same in terms of like, you've got the one building block skill. Now you need to add around it.
You're really doing the different, but still the same, but different.
Yes.
James Franco, I think. So I want to ask about Gary's game in particular, because I think he got off to a really nice start. And then towards the end of the season, when it was a lot of like, okay, nobody's playing, Gary, you're going to play, you're going to start, and you're going to be one of our main shooters. And then I think it really soured because the last few games, let me just read you the stat lines, 3 of 16 shooting against the Clippers, 5 of 20 shooting against Memphis, 8 of 16 against Washington. That game was fine. 2 of 8 against New York, 2 of 9 against Brooklyn, 9 of 25 against OKC, although he did make the game-winning assist, the drive and the assist to Chris Boucher for the 3. 3 of 15 shooting against Atlanta. So that really, really did sour him, I think, because at the start of it, the first 10 games that he played were fantastic. 18 points per game, shot at 47% from the field, 41% from deep. And of course, you know, you can't just pick and choose with guys who are shooters because, you know, people are going to get hot. Just like he's going to have a 17 of 19 game for 44 points against Cleveland, he's going to have, you know, a 5 of 20 game against Memphis. But at the same time, though, I think there is a bit of concern about his player type because I was thinking into it. So this season he averaged he averaged 1.8 free throw attempts per game. And he took 13.5 field goal attempts per game. So I looked it up this season, which players shot under 2 free throws a game, while also attempting more than 13 field goals per game. The list is three players. It's Gary Trent Jr., obviously, DeJounte Murray, which surprised me a little bit, and then Buddy Hield. And really, there's Buddy Hield is kind of similar, I think, to Gary Trent. Buddy can, I think he's even more willing to shoot than Gary is, which is hard to believe. but, you know, and I think Gary probably competes more than Buddy does, considering Buddy's on the Kings and also he just plays no defense. But that's kind of the player type right now. So, I mean, is there something that you could see maybe be an area of focus for Gary to sort of get past? And look, there's nothing wrong with being Buddy Hield. Buddy makes a lot of good money and things like that. He's in the league, whatever. But is there a level that he can get to where if you can add one or two things to his game with some focused development that he becomes something more than let's say Buddy Hield?
Yeah, I mean, I think the free throw rate is a good kind of, obviously there are guys who struggle to get to the line and guys who are good at getting to the line. But I think for kind of role players in a position like Trent's, free throw rate can almost tell us like role specifics, right? Like, like Gary Trent Jr. just does not shoot from high danger areas. He shoots almost exclusively from outside. And that's, you know, that came down a little bit in Toronto, but for his career, 56% of his shot attempts have been from three. And you don't get fouled on threes, really, unless you're shooting against Chris Boucher and he's flying out at you with his arms waving and lands in the second row and stuff. And, you know, you can dive into some of Gary Trent's, you know, ancillary stats, too, and find even more. Like, he had the lowest turnover percentage in the league because he rarely dribbles or passes the ball. You know, he had what I imagine was one of the lowest assist rates in the league. I don't have, 13th percentile assist rate.
Okay.
And third percentile assist rate based on offensive usage among wings per cleaning the glass. So basically no wing passed created assists less relative to how much they shot than Gary Trent. So what that tells you is right now he's exclusively a play finisher. And, you know, there are play finishers out there who profile like that around the rim. And then there are basically his stat profile is a shooting specialist right now.
Yep.
And what's going to be huge for him is he just has to add the complementary offensive skills because it's great to have a guy who can shoot 39% on, you know, 8 3-point attempts per 36, but your ceiling's fairly limited like that. Right. So, you know, Trent's a guy who, he does have a little bit of off dribble game. You know, he loves his, what we can call his Kobe package where it's, you know, take one step inside the 3-point line, go behind your back or cross over and create that mid range space for yourself, which is great. It's important to develop that. And he shot a lot more from the floater range and the mid range after coming to the Raptors. And he shot those shots like semi effectively. But the big thing for him is like, he has not shown an ability to get to the rim or finish at the rim. Yeah. And that's what the free throw rate tells me. And that's what to me right now, especially since he's not a passer, makes him a really easy guy to guard, right? Like 40% 3-point shooters aren't easy to guard, but 40% 3-point shooters who are not much of a threat to put the ball on the floor and break down your defense inside or create for someone else are fairly straightforward. So that's where he's at. I think offensively, I think the nice thing is that like that, being a 40% 3-point shooter on high volume is the hardest part of all of this, right? So, and the rarest part of all of this. So he doesn't need to become Norm attacking closeouts and attacking along the baseline to get to the rim, but he needs to become something more than this because right now he's a guy that you really willingly drive off the line and you don't change the your base paint defense because Gary Trent is attacking a closeout and you certainly don't worry about him making the next pass. So, I don't think that's a particularly unique spot to be in as a 22-year-old who has only gotten minutes for like a season and a half. But yeah, the other parts of his offensive game really need to catch up to where the shooting is.
Yeah, I remember a few months back I was doing the live call-in show and someone called in and compared him to Terrence Ross. And I was like, come on, that's an insult. But then I looked into the Terrence Ross thing more and more and I was like, he's right now Terrence Ross adjacent, especially at that stage.
Hey, would have looked really good on this Raptors roster the last 2 years? Terrence Ross.
Yeah, so. No, fair enough. And I think there's a lot of things Gary does, though.
Yeah, it's not a bad, like Trent actually shoots more threes at a slightly higher percentage on a per minute basis. Mm-hmm. Terrence is just like, he's come along more as a playmaker and obviously a guy who can, you know, throw down dunks when he gets the opportunity.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's another guy that like, you can kind of see that like Terrence Ross is maybe the ceiling for Trent with the current skill package, right? Like,
right.
Like Ross just never became a playmaker to secondary playmaker levels. And he never, you know, he's never been a guy that you're going to give the ball to, you know, score one-on-one at much volume. Like I think he took 6% of his attempts at the rim this year. Like, So yeah, it's not a bad guy to put their first three seasons next to each other. Even though Trent's a little younger at this point than Ross was, but
yeah.
The nice thing is they still have a bunch of Terrence Ross plays in their playbook that they gave to CJ Miles and now can give to Gary Trent. So
that this is true. And also the nice thing is Terrence Ross became a pretty valuable player to eventually trade down the line. I mean, yeah. You know, Serge was pretty good. Yeah. I
do think that's part of the Gary Trent equation this summer.
Absolutely.
Too, right. Like, so, yeah. Like, especially if you say the Raptors win the lottery and or want to retain Kyle and Chris Boucher, like you're pretty much out of cap space anyway. So mm-hmm. The opportunity cost of re-signing Gary Trent, even at, like, say it's 4 years, $60 million. Even if you don't love that price for Gary Trent, that's a tradable deal for a 22-year-old who shoots like that. So you probably, if you're going to operate as an above cap team with Lowry and Boucher back, you probably, you know, your walk away point for Gary Trent is higher than it would be if you were using cap space for him, because you have his rights and it's a consideration of Gary Trent versus nothing, right? Or Gary Trent, you know, even if you want to look at Gary Trent as Gary Trent the asset, which is, you know, I don't like doing that from like a personal level, but from a roster building level, that's a real chip to have.
Yeah. And listen, this is all assuming that Gary stops developing at 22, which is I don't think that the signs necessarily suggest it. I think his role has been sort of narrowed by this point. So I think he would need to do tangible improvements to sort of expand out of this current role. But like in this current role, like he's already pretty valuable. And I think there are small things that I think he can do in terms of better shot selection. I think obviously he will be more efficient the more guys are setting him up rather than he's setting himself up. And then, you know, there's probably tangible things. Like I think he does have a little bit of a driving game. And I think that with more coaching, I do, and especially with Nick Nurse teams, like there's just not a lot of guys taking that floater range shot, not a lot of guys taking that mid range shot, that he will be pushed and encouraged to go to the rim more. Now, whether that happens or not, we'll see, but that's part of development. And I do think that if he gets the rim a little bit more, if he learns the plays a little bit more to the point where there's at least some like basic cursory passes being made, some nice reads being made, you know, it's not impossible. I mean, you know, I think the three-point shot is such a valuable tool right now. So to build off of that tool, there's a lot of things that people do. Like even Terrence Ross, for example, like he's gotten really good at jumping up and just drawing the three-point shot foul. I don't even want to call it flopping, but like that's one way shooters can get to the free throw line is if you come out the pick and roll, you jump in midair, your legs kind of swing a little bit, it knocks into a guy, and you get three shots. And, you know, that's not a play, quote-unquote play, but – I mean, listen, every time I watch an Orlando Magic game, which is ideally no more than the four times the Raptors play them per year, Terrence Ross is doing that at least and getting 3 points off of that. So,
just continue the comparison further, too, and just put it out there. Gary Trent had that 44-point game this year. He's coming for Terrence's 51 at some point.
He's coming for that crown. And
he only Trent shot 7 of 9 on threes in that 44-point game.
I know. That game was ridiculous.
Terrence was 10 of 17. So,
yeah.
That's the only time in Gary Trent Jr.'s career that you could say he should have been more aggressive shooting. And this is all before getting into the defensive side too, which I think we probably both agree that like Trent's reputation coming in was he has some potential on that end, but the impact hasn't caught up to that potential. And I think he's still in that stage. And I don't think the Raptors defensive ecosystem is like a super easy one to get dropped into. But also like he also was not super effective defensively. So
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do see some of the physical
aren't finished products, I guess.
Definitely not. At 22, I was definitely not as good of a podcaster as I am now. I think the physicality is on defense. There is a level of physicality there that I will trust to be developed into something else. I think he's also a reasonably competitive guy. He doesn't really like float through games. You might say, well, he tries a little too hard to impact the game, but you know, you can work your way down from there rather than the other way around. So, yeah, I mean, the 15 mil, I think, is probably what I would estimate him coming out to, 14 to 15. I don't really think there's that big of a risk that he's going to get this a much bigger offer than that. What's your impression on this?
Yeah, I mean, it only takes one team, right, is the thing. And
yeah, but which team's looking at Gary Trent Jr. is like, this is – if I give him $20 million a year, this is going to change my life.
I mean, there are teams that do that every offseason, though. There's always a – look at the Alan Crabb deal, man. It's,
that was a cap jump and stuff like that. Like
I know, but yeah, I mean, look, it's some of it's going to depend on what happens with the biggest player options and – where exactly the cap comes in. You know, you're looking at teams like the Knicks and the Mavericks as the big kind of cap space players who were solid this year. You know, there's some interesting scenarios where like maybe Charlotte moves on from Malik Monk and they're like, oh, Gary Trent Jr. We have Malik Monk at home. And you know, you could see guys like that, or I mean, Tim Hardaway Jr. is much older than those guys, but you know, maybe a team looks to get a Dallas, like Dallas looks to get a little cheaper and younger in that same spot. So I could see teams, you know, certainly making overtures at him. And it wouldn't surprise me. 20 would surprise me. I don't think like 17 and a half, 18 would surprise me that much, just because like that's still very much in the like, you could trade that deal. It's not a huge thing. But yeah, I mean, if it gets north of 15, that's probably where, if I'm the Raptors, that's where you start considering not matching. And then the kind of, you know, the asset value tilts the other way where it's like, okay, well, maybe it's better to just not have anything in that spot than Trent at this price moving forward. Even if you're looking at him as a trade chip or whatever. I think he'll probably get a little bit more than 15, but yeah, I think the like tougher decisions come in like the 17, 18, 19 range.
Okay, so basically we're probably looking at 350, 340, somewhere between 345 and
360, something like like okay. 460 is a, like, I think if you wanted him at 15, you probably have to give him the fourth year, which is fine. You know, he's only going to be 27 at the end of that deal, so yeah. Even if the fourth year is a player option or whatever, if it can get you 460, you offer it up.
I mean, look, I like Gary Trent, and I really want to see where he's going with this.
He's
a nice complementary player to other guys who are playmakers as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he's a guy that, like, you know, he's only 22, so he fits the younger timeline of the younger part of the core. Mm-hmm. But also, like, there's some upside left here, and he's kind of a nice middle ground where, like, yeah, he's had, like, a season and a half, two seasons of NBA minutes. So you don't have to, you know, the training wheels are off at this point. He can be in your rotation now, but there's still some upside to tap into there because he's only 22, because he hasn't been, you know, he had what, 17 games with the Raptors to really expand his offensive role and see what he's capable of. So yeah, I mean, he's a nice, if he's like your fifth or sixth guy, like, I he's a guy that I'm always probably going to like better off the bench than as a starter, even though, you know, him getting those shots created for him by the other guys is going to be better. I don't know. But I always like Norman Terrence off the bench better too. So I think I think I just like the kind of high volume, low assist guys as kind of microwave guys in the second unit.
Yeah, that's fair. That's generally how they're used. Transitioning over, I want to talk about the rookies as well, the three rookies this year that we saw in the Raptors. Malachi Flynn, Jalen Harris, Freddie Gillespie. I guess with Malachi, what was your biggest takeaway from his rookie season? He obviously got a chance to really, really play a lot of minutes, basically post-trade deadline, Kyle and Fred taking turns sitting, sometimes both of them sitting. A whole lot of sitting, and a lot of coaching Malachi from the sideline. But what was the one biggest takeaway you saw from Malachi's game this year?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is, like, defensively, he's ready. Offensively, you're going to want him playing as many minutes alongside a Kyle or Fred as possible. I don't think he's, you know, as advanced as the pick and roll game was in college. Mm-hmm. And as much as the shooting mechanics are look way better than the 32% that he hit, you know, he's not a, I don't know if he's ready to run entire units on his own right now. Certainly not units when you only have six players and three of them are centers. The defense, the defense is there, and the defense is what gets you into the rotation under Nick Nurse, mm-hmm. and you figure the offense out as you go. So I think, like, if Malachi Flynn does not open the season with a real rotation role, given what he showed defensively, I'll be very surprised.
Yeah, I agree with that too. Malachi, I mean, if you just want to take from April onwards, and obviously he won Rookie of the Month for April, you know, LaMelo was hurt. You know, we know LaMelo was the best rookie out of the East, maybe in the league in general. But Malachi averaged 12 points per game, 4 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 1.3 steals, shot the ball a lot better from three, up to 37%. You know, there's some nice things there. Got to the free throw line occasionally as well, but it's a nice sort of skill set to build off of defensively. It's nice for sure. Honestly, I think point of attack defense is really underrated. I mean, again, when you're watching the playoffs right now, I really do feel like teams just aren't applying that much pressure on the ball in a lot of these series. And whatever, like some of these series, like for example, if you're playing against Denver, how much are you really going to pressure the ball when the ball's in the hands of Nikola Jokic, you know, free throw line extended? You could pressure him, sure, but he's just going to hold the ball over his head and eventually just shoot a slow jumper over you and cash it. But like, a lot of these other teams, I feel like there's been a lack of ball pressure. So I really do value that trade about Malachi, getting to turn guys a few times, pressuring them off the court. I think that's probably one of the bigger hurdles, is just like, as a smaller guard, you do wonder how that's going to play defensively. And I thought he had he was willing to play in the paint, was willing to dive for loose balls. He was, you know, not really bullied that often. You know what I mean? Like, even though he was small, like a lot of guards, if they're small, they drive past them. They, you know, they're obviously not contesting a lot of shots, not really contesting rebounds. I thought Malachi was pretty involved in the way that, like, not necessarily the way Fred and Kyle are, because those guys are maniacs, but like, you could see how he could get to that level of scrappiness.
He got the message, right? Like we heard Nick Nurse talk about it a lot of like, what are you looking for more from him? And at the start, it was very much those dirty things, right? Like, if you get beat, try to poke the ball loose from behind.
Yeah.
Or if you poke it on, you know, if you reach through a screen to poke the ball loose, you better be the guy hitting the deck to try to pick it up and that kind of thing. So, but I think he's there, man. Like, obviously, lots of room for growth. He was a rookie. But defensively, he's just, you know, it's very hard to defend as a point guard, as a rookie, I think. And he met expectations and probably exceeded them on that end.
Yeah. Is there one immediate tangible improvement that you would like to see from him? I think Nick's talked about his shooting when asked about this.
Yeah, I mean, I like the mechanics on his shot, like even his pull-up that he didn't hit very often. I think I don't know how you improve this necessarily, but he doesn't, like, anytime he was able to get to the rim, he was having to use the tempo changes and the craft in his dribble to do that. He didn't, even against switches, or when he was guarded by a slower player, like, he didn't really show the burst to be able to get by guys to get to the rim. And if that's something that with a full season of, you know, physical development in the Raptor system, you know, that's probably, I think, his biggest limiting factor right now. Cause I think the shot's going to come along. Obviously you put the work in on it, but it's that burst and the ability to kind of separate from your defender. Changing speeds is great. The old Jose Calderon, like, I have five speeds, so even if my top speed is way slower than yours, I have all these different points I could trick you with. That's cool and it's good, but you know, a rookie at his stage in development, I'm hoping he can build a little bit more burst there to beat his primary defender.
Yeah, Jose Calderon coming at you like a Mark Burley fastball, you know, just like switching it up to like a 60s change. That's all the baseball I know. Jalen Harris. We've seen not that much of Jalen. Obviously, he was hurt at two different points in the season. Showed some things in the G League and then wasn't really sure if he was going to replicate that in the NBA. Obviously, I wouldn't necessarily say the last few games of the season are that indicative, but he did have that really nice game against Dallas. He did have some very confident looking moments. And yeah, ultimately, I think that, I mean, first off, did he do enough to get another contract? Because that's actually, you know, he's not even guaranteed to be on the team next year.
Yeah, I would say so. I think,
okay,
you know, he the number 59 pick, you can walk away from that pretty quickly. The Raptors did with DeJuan Hernandez.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't draft Shamori Ponds, but like booted him on a two-way as undrafted free agent. Like the opportunity cost in those spots is low. You don't worry about losing a guy like that. But I think he showed enough. I thought his regular season in the G League before he banged up his finger was encouraging. He was showing progress. I really lost confidence when he came back for the G League playoffs. In retrospect, it looks like maybe he, like, I went back when he started cooking for the Raptors down the stretch, I went back and watched some of his clips from those playoff games. And like, it's hard to say, like, you can't really like tell this through screen, but like, mm-hmm. he was coming back from a bad finger injury and like maybe tried to rush back because it was the playoffs and stuff. He just didn't look comfortable mm-hmm. with the ball at all. And like a guy like that, everyone saw it down the stretch there, is like confidence is a huge part of the package with him because he's going to take some shots that make you raise your eyebrows. But he, you know, that confidence is a big part of it. And that confidence is a hard thing to teach. I would say, you know, scoring wise, he delivered, like he hit his threes well. He finished at the rim better, like a tiny sample, but he finished at the rim better than I would have expected. Given where he is, like he shot like 70-71% at the rim in his NBA minutes, which is great. But the big thing for me was like, he did show a little bit of that secondary playmaking skill too. Turnover prone, but he's the 59th pick playing in his first dozen NBA games. So mm-hmm. The fact that he showed a little bit of that playmaking juice is encouraging, because I think for him to stick in the NBA, he probably has to develop some combo skills. Like, I don't know that he has the size and defense to stick as kind of like a true slashing scoring wing. So he might need to round out those. He might need to round out the point guard side of that combo package. But yeah, it was encouraging. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets that multi-year minimum treatment, either before summer league or coming out of summer league.
Oh man. The Sam Presti / Daryl Morey special.
The Lou Dort.
the Lou Dort. Yeah.
No. The Raptors haven't gone 4 years with those. They haven't been that bad. It's usually two or three.
Yeah.
So it's much, much more pro labor. No fourth year tacked on.
Yikes. You could be pro labor, but I mean, these guys do make decent money as well. And on top of that, if you're just looking at the last four games of Jalen Harris, 18.5 points per game. I think, by the way, Stanley Johnson, I think Stanley might have averaged 18 points per game in the last four games of the season as well. That guy, he was snapping. But I think Jalen showed enough skill wise. I think if the injuries is not something that like is anything long term or something reoccurring, then I think I think there's intrigue there in his skill set. Plus, I love his confidence. Real cool guy to interview, I felt like. Definitely said yes, sir. He was the guy who said yes, sir. Yeah. And
yes, sir.
All the time. Very confident dude. Easy to...
I'd also just say, like, so. I think my bar for bringing a guy like Harris back next year is lower than it normally... Not that he was bad. Like, not that I'm lowering the bar, I don't think, artificially. But also, like, he didn't get an off season and he was hurt a bit. And
yeah, exactly.
There was none of that Mississauga up and down and stuff in the G League. But like him and Malachi Flynn did not get the same rookie year development treatment that the other Raptors development pieces have gotten. So I think, you know, I would probably lean toward giving the guys like that another shot, or at least like give them to camp to fight for it kind of thing. Mm.
And then the last rookie, Freddie Gillespie, joined the team midseason.
Block party in the USA.
Block party in the USA. Yeah, Cat Daddy Gillespie, as Josh Hart has nicknamed him. It's weirdly sticking now. The Lobster Claw. I don't know. He's got a lot of nicknames. New Freddy, but
Gilly.
Gilly.
Calls him Gilly. Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was. You know what though? I think it takes a little bit of appreciation of the smaller things to appreciate Freddie, because I think that like he's obviously not a big time scorer. But he did rebound at a pretty high rate, and he did get up to contest shots, and it seemed like Nick really liked him. Nick,
mind getting dunked on. Like he had a handful of blocks at the rim, and like ask Yuta, man, that's a risky way to live. But it's good, man. I liked him. I liked him a lot in the G League. Like he was a guy that I really wanted I was really hoping the 905 got in the G League draft. I just think he kind of fits the system defensively at the center spot. He has a pretty long way to go, I think. And the reason I was high on Gillespie before they signed him and when they signed him was really not to do with what he'd look like this year. It's, you know, you've got this guy who barely played in high school, went to D3, basically redshirted his first D3 year, then played a year, then redshirted in D1, then became this really good guy. And then he improved a lot over the course of the G League season. So he's a guy that I'm really interested in, like the developmental capacity of guy has not had a lot of hands-on high level basketball coaching yet. And what can he look like in a year if you do that, or even at the start of next year? So he's got some body stuff to work on. Like he's not, I just think he's a little stiff through the hips and stuff. Like even though he covers ground well, defensively, like I don't think he's the most fluid moving on the defensive end. But I think like the core stuff is there, right? Like the instincts defensively, the way he feels the game, and then like the way he understands his role and the space he occupies on offense. Like he's got the kind of more intellectual parts of it down. Now it's just a matter of like, can you bring that athleticism up to where it's a little higher and he's got a little bit more burst and a little bit more speed. And, you know, I think he's further away than some of the other Raptors projects in terms of ball skill and stuff, but he's got a pretty soft touch at least.
Yeah. I was going to say, when you said he's got a little bit of body stuff to work on, I was like, you know, listen, it's the pandemic. Everyone's got a little bit of going on. So
yeah, look, there's a reason our Zooms are only from here up, right?
Yeah, no, it's terrible. It's like an iceberg, but, I was happy with Freddie Gillespie as well. I think the offensive rebounding is nice. I think he used the size well in that front, carving out that space, as you mentioned. Soft touch with the left hook. A lot of patience. Every single time he catches the ball down, I'm like, oh my God, it's going to be a 3-second violation. I'm like, get rid of the ball. And then at 2.9, like, you know how there's 2.9ing in defense. There's 2.9ing on offense for him. He just loves waiting it out. But you know, he showed good energy. You know, I think if you just, his activity was consistently high every game. And the thing is, that's really hard to evaluate about some of these things is A, you know, he didn't really play with a lot of high level point guards just because Kyle and Fred were not available for a lot of these games. And Malachi was good maybe half the time as a point guard, in some of these games. Some of these other games wasn't as much. And then also he just played in a ton of these games where he ended up playing two center lineups with like Kem Birch at the start when he first joined. Then he started playing three center lineups with Aaron Baines at three. And Stanley Johnson has a center-esque offensive skill set sometimes. So that's almost four centers on the floor at once. So, you know, it's hard to judge Freddie's numbers based off that. But I think some of the raw tools are there. It's interesting. I think he's probably another guy that you would look to bring back.
I think he's a guy that you know, he does have a small guarantee that triggers in his deal right after summer league.
Okay,
so there's a little bit of investment in him, but I think you kind of look at the offseason for guys like him and Harris and you know Yuta and Bembry and those guys too, maybe Bembry a little less just because he's further along, but you look at it in waves, right? It's like, okay, the season's over and now the next wave is this development window between now and the start of summer league. And are you making the summer league roster? Are you, because the summer league roster, don't forget, or summer league starts after free agency.
Mm-hmm.
So after free agency opens. So they'll have to make some decisions by then. And then you've got the summer league. After summer league is probably the decision point on Gillespie. And then you get to training camp where, okay, if Yuta makes the team, his deal guarantees in full. If all those guys actually, I think their deals guarantee at the start of the season, at least Yuta, Paul, and Freddie off the top of my head. So you've got kind of this like three-tier summer system where, you know, okay, you've made it out of this phase. Now you've got to show it the next phase. I don't think any of these guys, not to use dollars as like actual guarantees, but like, yeah, I don't think any of these guys have anything guaranteed right now. And it's a high pressure offseason for a lot of these guys. Because, I mean, you look at it, and whatever happens in free agency, the Raptors have seven guys with non guaranteed deals and three picks in the draft. And they're always players on the market with like undrafted free agents or like, hey, you know, we're going to bring this guy over from, you know, Ishmael Wainwright is going to come back from Europe and we're going to give him the old Drew Crawford treatment at training camp or something like that. Like they do stuff like that. So there's going to be competition. And I think it'll be, I mean, that stuff's good for everyone, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Which by the way, summer league this year is going to be lit. I'm looking
forward. If they end up bringing Ishmael Wainwright specifically to summer league now, that'd be a weird one. But
yeah, I was going to say when you said bringing up Ishmael Wainwright and giving the Drew Crawford treatment, only you and like, I guess Dan Tolsman and Bobby and Masai and Chad Sanders understood what that meant.
EJ Singler is so mad that I excluded him.
Wow.
Right now.
Oh my God. Yeah, man, I'm sure you're dying to go back to the Paramount Fine Food Center.
Yeah, next season. Yeah, I am. Let's fingers crossed for vaccine rollouts and all that stuff.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, no, the summer league's gonna look nice though. I mean, I think honestly, like, it's not quite as lit as when they had Fred, Pascal, and Jakob that one year.
Yeah,
I think DeLon might have played, or he maybe got hurt again or something.
Yeah, I think he played, and then but he only played a couple games. He did the year before was the one where. Oh no, he did get hurt because that's what kind of opened up the spot for Fred to like really down the, he had the shoulder separation thing.
Yeah.
So that really opened up Fred to lock down that roster spot over like Brady Heslip and those guys.
Yeah. That was, turns out that was all for the best. But yeah, I mean, it's not quite as lit as that year. It's not quite as lit as the year JV put 20 and 10 on everybody. That was amazing. I think he was named Summer League MVP.
He was. That was your first Raptors Republic piece.
That oh my goodness, wow, see, damn, it's been a long time, but no, I mean, I'm really excited, honestly. I think, you know, especially for these guys to get more developmental minutes would be huge, and it'll be a great opportunity for these guys to showcase what they have, plus what the Raptors are getting in the draft, which we didn't have time to get to. Real quick, if you have to make
Can I ask one more summer league question?
Of course, Blake, of course you can.
Okay, so for anyone who doesn't know this, in 2006, after being the number one pick, Andrea Bargnani became the first player to ever foul out of a summer league game. You get 10
you get
fouls.
10. I was going to say you get 10.
You get 10 fouls.
Oh man.
In summer league. Gillespie was not tops on the team, but he was tops on the team among guys who are probably going to be on that summer league roster with 4 fouls per 36. And we saw him rack them up a couple times.
Yeah.
He's not, I don't think he sniffs it, but is that on the table for you? Basically, I just want to see someone do it again so I can write about how Bargnani did it.
Well, I mean, listen, we saw Chris Boucher in summer league at least twice, and he never did it, so.
Yeah.
10 is hard to get to, man. That might be like the Rasheed Wallace technicals record. Like,
yeah,
how are you going to commit 10 fouls? How long is a summer league game? Is it not 40 minutes?
Yeah. And, like, you got to be on the floor long enough.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
it
who
is
was coaching
funny, though,
that
like,
team? Like who was coaching Boucher, summer league?
Yeah, like Boucher still fouls more than 4 per 36 now.
Yeah.
But yeah, Patrick Mutombo would give the hook a little earlier than that, I think.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. What was I gonna end up on?
I don't know. Certainly not me rambling about.
about summer league of 2006. That's
any
that's
chance
tough,
to take man. A shot at Kristaps Porzingis? I mean, Wow.
You know, I think Kristaps is probably better than Bargnani, but like not by much, like right now. And it's, I mean, you know, listen, Kristaps is, if he were a better guy, I think probably maybe there'd be more sympathy too, but it's just, yeah, there's
not there's much the off-court,
not like, much redeemable there, to be honest.
Yeah.
So.
And then on top of that, like whining about your role while you're playing awful basketball.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. Last thing I was going to ask was just, I guess like media coverage, like how weird it's been for the last 18 months. Like, so the recent updates seem to be trending in the right way. I mean, first off, the most important thing is that the recent health reports in Ontario seem to be trending the right way. The numbers are coming down. The lockdown it's taking effect now. It's having the intended effect. And also vaccine rollouts seem to be accelerating. I think majority of people now have at least their first dose. people are getting their second shot soon as well. You're seeing in the NHL, the North Division wrapping up. My Canadians, obviously, going through to represent Canada and the city of Toronto, evidently, based on the CN Tower. But that's looking in the right direction. So, you know, the NHL is going to have your cross-border play. And at this rate, I think by the time that it gets down to it, like, we're probably talking about mid-August, maybe September-ish, like, you know, there should be no issues, I think, in terms of if everything goes the right way, people keep getting their vaccines, that there should be not as much of an issue with the Raptors playing at home this season, which would be great. But I do think that, like, you know, look, we can speculate on that, but obviously we are not public health ministers. My question is, like, how much do you think a return to normalcy for us as reporters is going to look like? Are we still going to be in scrums? Are we still going to be in the arena? Like, what's it going to look like?
I don't really know. Like if we're trying to use baseball as an example, it sounds like they're starting to get to where there will be one-on-ones facilitated. But baseball also has the advantage of being primarily an outdoor sport where you could do that, like, 6 feet apart along the baseline during batting practice or whatever, okay, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know what that's going to look like for us at Summer League. I don't know what that's going to look like. Like I would love to hear for Summer League, because if all we're going to be able to do is sit in the crowd and watch Zooms, then yeah, it's probably not worth the money. Unless you win it back. But anyway, okay. So I don't really know. Like, it's hard to imagine we'd be in the locker room, but also, like, if we're going to have to be fully vaccinated to get in the door, and there's going to be 20,000 people in the arena, like,
why couldn't,
like, if everything else is back to normal, why wouldn't that element be back to normal? And right, yeah. So I don't really know, man. I don't have answers. I'm not one of the PBWA, like, directors or whatever. So I get my information from them. But I would hope that by the start of, you know, training camp, like, we can get back to, look, I don't want to be the like a complainy sports writer, but the access we've had, we've all been very fortunate to, like, keep our jobs and still have sports to write about.
Yeah.
But for you guys, like the listeners and the readers, you know, there's been some fidelity lost these last 16 months in terms of, you know, us getting to know players and getting to know what stories there are to tell, and helping fans get to know the players at a more intimate level. And as great a job as Open Gym does with that stuff, you know, it can't be the only thing. And, you know, obviously there were moments this year, like Pascal's benching and stuff like that, where it would have been great to be around and have more detail and stuff. But the big thing is, like, I don't know, man, there's a personal element to this job for some of us that's been missing, and that ability to connect with players or coaches, or the vibe around the team and the vibe around the fan base that hasn't been there. And I've missed it a lot. So hopefully we're getting closer to it.
Yeah. I think, you know, more so for what you do, but, like, I think there's what we go to the arena, let's say tip up 7:30. We probably get down there 4:30, maybe 5.
Yeah. Yeah. Eat some of that free pizza. Shout out to Rebecca.
No. We got to cut that off. Post pandemic, we got to go one season without that pizza to come back.
No, it's got to be just salad, man.
That's it. That's honestly, that's what I'm having. I mean, like, you know, I think there's that portion there where there's, like, you have 2 hours and you end up bumping into people, you end up having conversations with people, and, like, a lot of the work, not even the work of getting the story, but the work of getting to know people and, like, getting to make some connections and potentially form the stories. These stories don't come out of nowhere, right? And so,
yeah. It gets your mind going, right? Like,
exactly.
It's, you know, the curiosity or something comes up in a conversation. It's not like, you know, it's not like you're talking to an assistant coach and suddenly they say something and you're like, oh, I'm going to run and write what you said. Mm-hmm. But it's like, no, maybe that plants a seed in your brain, and then you're watching the player you were talking about later and you see something, and it just kind of snowballs like that. That stuff happens all the time. Or, you know, you can see what guys are working on pregame and stuff like that. Plus, like, I don't know, like, there's sometimes I'm hanging out talking to you or Alex or Joel Wolfond or something, and, like, it sparks a story idea. Because, like, Joel Wolfond and I are just, like, you know, watching some guy practice his floaters. And we're like, oh, we're the only two guys that like floaters. And now suddenly everyone likes floaters again.
Honestly, the floater, I mean, listen, I'm
showing up early for Etuan Moore's warm-ups.
only floaters. Yeah. And he, I can only imagine he makes 100% of those. Yeah, listen, the floater game is something that I'm now really, really missing on the Raptors. I mean, I think Kyle did it a little bit more this
year. But you've added it to your own game too, have you not? What, wasn't that what you were saying? That like elbow range push shot is what you've been working on?
I definitely don't have touch for a floater. I barely have touch for an elbow jumper wide open. No, I mean, listen, my personal accomplishment during the pandemic is making 16 straight free throws. That's not bad. That's really not bad, okay? Don't ask me my overall shooting percentages, but you know, definitely doing something there. But yeah, I mean, listen, the floater range is good. By the way, am I just imagining this, or did Nick Nurse say earlier this season that he's just not that big of a fan of the shot? Or am I just like, because I don't want to go back and listen through all the scrums again or something like that, but I feel like he said something.
This is why you got to be on the transcription documents and contribute, because I could just go in my Google, like my Google subfolder right now, and just search floater and.
That's true.
But you don't contribute, so you don't
get, listen, you don't get I only ask questions in the Zoom so that I can clip it for Twitter later on, okay? Half the time I actually want to know something, the other half the time I just want to chat with Nick Nurse and yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know how it goes, man. I play talk teachers, about baseball but... and
oh man, every time you come on the Zoom call with one of Nick's sweaters, man, I mean
that happened one time.
Yeah, well, you know, Nick noticed, so.
Yeah, and plus it was a City and Color sweater, not a Nick Nurse sweater.
Okay, but
unless Nick Nurse is listening, in which case it's definitely a Nick Nurse sweater.
But Nick, if you're listening, come on the podcast. I'm gonna reach out to you anyway, but come on the podcast, okay? Listen, I didn't ask all the questions all year to not try to follow up, and we'll maybe capitalize. But in any case, that does with the podcast. You know, me and you, Blake, have ranted quite a bit. Honestly, we could get easily to like 2 hours to talk, but I mean, realistically, I don't think anyone wants that.
No, it's better to split it up, and then you can come on my podcast at some point in the off season. We could,
I mean,
we
listen,
make
I'm
all
ready.
The same points and talk about all the same things again.
Listen, I am ready. Hopefully you bring me on at a time where there's actual things to talk about. If there's nothing to talk about, then maybe we can discuss. By the way, what's good with the Jays? What's good with the Jays? I thought they were going to be good. I was really hyped.
I mean, they're not bad. They're they've been really, really injury bugged.
Okay.
Not they haven't had Springer like at all, and it's now like that organization is like 10 times worse than the Raptors for like honesty about injuries and stuff.
Oh,
so
okay, great.
Who knows?
Fantastic. But like,
they're 3 games over 500 and have a really good run differential. So they're hanging in there. But yeah, okay. They need even if you got Springer and a couple of the bullpen arms back, like you probably need to address one of the rotation spots and maybe third base. But you've got like 6 weeks to the deadline still, or 7 weeks or something.
Are there exciting guys to look out for? Obviously, we know about Bo. We know about Vladdy, some of the other guys. But who is this new picture I keep seeing?
Alec Manoa?
Yes.
He's fun, man. Okay. So he's interesting because he basically has not pitched in the minor leagues. Like I think he's the second fastest guy from his draft class to make it to the majors. So he was drafted in 2019. He pitched like 17 innings because you don't like you get drafted in late June and then you get thrown into the minor league system later, but only partially. And then like last year he lost his there were no minor leagues last year.
OK,
so they were in this weird position of like, well, do we start his clock and have him pitch for the major league team? And they just needed him so much. And he was like he was dominating the minors over the couple starts he had. I don't know, man. Young pitchers are going to take like you got to have patience with them. They're going to show some cool stuff and they're going to get lit up some games. That's the way it is when you're like Roy Halladay once posted the worst ERA in the history of baseball. And now and then he became the greatest pitcher in franchise history probably. So
yeah, there you go.
You're going to take some lumps, Alec Manoa.
What am I saying here? 10.5 Ks per 9. I'm on fangraphs.com for the first time in like 5 years at least.
Yeah. This is great. This is the start of how Alex borrows your Athletic login. You're going to start borrowing my Fangraphs login. Eventually come full circle.
Yeah, no, that's I mean, to be honest, you know, if I got back into fantasy, I'd definitely get back into this kind of stuff. Okay, so yeah. Jay's
he's good, man. His bat missing profile is really strong. Like he's going to get a lot of strikeouts. He's going to miss a lot of bats, but you know, right now he doesn't have elite command. Like he's kind of in baseball, they tend to talk about guys as stuff and command.
Yeah.
So stuff is how well your pitches move, what's your velocity, that kind of stuff. And then command is how well are you locating, you know, if you're missing, are you missing over the heart of the plate? Are you missing outside? Mm-hmm. And he grooved a couple sliders last night that he got really lucky, didn't get pounced on. So he's going to give up some homers and stuff, especially because he throws so hard. But he's cool, man. He's definitely a guy.
He's definitely a guy. That's good. That's good to know. Okay, so will Jays make the playoffs? Are we going to keep the playoff streak going, man? Come on. Those two games in Buffalo last year were just like, I need that again. I mean, not in that same fashion, but I need that again.
Yeah. The tough part is their division's very good. So
I mean, this is the same story every year, though.
I know. Okay. But like right now, they're in fourth in the division, even fourth out of five, even though they're three games over 500.
Yeah.
They do have it's kind of if you want to be optimistic, they're in the midst of a pretty tough stretch of schedule right now. Mm-hmm. But they are, I actually think they've played the toughest schedule in baseball so far. But they haven't played any of their games yet against the Baltimore Orioles, who are maybe the worst team in the American League. And nice, so they get 19 against them. And then they also haven't played yet against the three really bad AL Central teams. So they have you don't want to get too thirsty over the schedule getting easier and stuff, but they've had a pretty tough one so far. So,
Okay. All right.
Listen. They basically haven't played any of the really bad teams yet.
Well, listen, once the NBA playoffs,
except for Texas maybe, but anyway.
This is great. Texas and Baltimore being bad is very nice to hear.
Last time I watched the Jays was like 2015. Kansas City to slide down a little bit more too.
Yeah, exactly. No, I was gonna say once the NBA playoffs are done, once the WNBA is done, once the Euros are done, once the World Cup is done, the Olympics, once the Olympic qualifying tournament is done, once Summer League is done, then I will be there to watch the Jays, and I hope they're in the playoff race at that point. So
this is what baseball is the best for, right? Like it's
the ultimate background stuff. Like it really is. And I used to love like just listening to like the Jays on the radio. This is back when I was like 18, 19, like honestly, like between like the age of 14 and age of 19, I probably listened to like at least half the Jays games on the radio. And like, that was just really nice to just listen to the game while you're doing other stuff, because you could really not have to focus on the game that much.
Yeah. It's definitely, I think, the easiest sport to be a casual of.
Right? Exactly. Like, yeah.
Like you can, even when you're there live, like you just be drinking beers and talking to your friends. And
that's mostly what a baseball game is. Like,
it's great.
You're not really looking pitch by pitch. So half the time you can't even see where the ball is going. Like every time, like depending where you're sitting in whatever arena you're going to, like if you're hitting a pop fly or like an actual home run, like half the time I can't tell. I don't even know what to cheer for until I actually see the ball go out or land or whatever. So
yet everyone will still boo balls and strike calls from the 500 level.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We can't see if the ball's going to leave the park, but we could tell that it was we could tell it caught the inside corner.
Yeah, there you go. Is there another cheating scandal going on in baseball? This is the thing. I see peripheral baseball things like from following like Jonah or whatever and like Zooms and you and like some other people, but like I don't really know what's going on. So is there baseball cheating again? Like how many times are people going to cheat in baseball? Like is this just the most cheat possible sport?
Yeah, so it's similar to, I mean, not as damaging, but like it's escalating in a way like the steroids did, where like, oh, it's an open secret. Everyone doctors the balls a little bit.
Why though? Why is that an open secret? This is a real freaking problem. Then, like,
but like it gets worse because like it becomes the open secret that everyone doctors the balls a little bit. And then it's like, well, if I'm not doctoring the ball, I'm putting myself at a disadvantage. Like we heard this a ton when the steroid stuff came out, is like how many guys were like, well, half my teammates were doing it. So like, I thought I had to, like, I was going to fall behind, or like, if you're like, there were way more guys on the fringes of rosters that got caught than like Barry Bonds types. So yeah, right now it's a ball doctoring thing. A lot of accusations from players and like off the record admittance from like execs and stuff like that. But I don't really know how you police it, because like this is as old as baseball. Like there were always guys that doctored up the ball, or like spitballs, or you know, a little habanero in the hat, so you you rub it on your nose, you get the snot going, and then you mix it with some sunscreen on your forearm and
what?
See, whatever the formulas are.
Nah, at a certain point, that's not a sport, man.
Have you ever watched a movie, Major League?
Yes, I have, of course, yeah.
So, you know, there's like the one old pitcher in that, and he's like explaining to the young guys, he's like, I got sunscreen here, and I got a little Vagisil here, and I got a little whatever. he's just like, his body is covered in random stuff you can use to doctor the ball, and you put it in all these different places so that you're not going back to the same spot. Like, if you keep touching the brim of your hat, that's how some guys have got caught before. You know, you keep touching the brim of your hat, and you look, and there's like this big brown smudge underneath the brim of your hat. Like, it's a little obvious, but if you're putting it everywhere, I don't know. And then you mix it with like the rosin bag, so like you get the wet, and then you get the powder, and you can get kind of a tacky grip to it.
Man, these guys must be taking the nastiest showers. Like, you know, it's just.
Have you ever looked at Jonah's nails before when he's stressed out?
No, but
it's probably exactly what all these guys' hands look like. Instead of it being chewed down, the nails are like long and like covered in like tar and gunk and stuff. Same idea, but other end of the spectrum.
That's amazing. Like, I wish there was some element to be able to cheat in basketball. Like, there's just. I guess it's just harder, but like, how do they do this? Like, everything's televised, right? Like, and there's a million cameras. There's literally thousands of people around watching it.
Balls get disposed of like every couple pitches. And like, I don't know that it's like obvious enough. Like, I've never examined a ball after. I don't know if it's obvious enough that, like, you know, if you've got a little sticky stuff on your fingertip to help you keep your nail or your front knuckle on the seam, whatever the pitch is, and like get that extra little bit of spin. Like, I don't know if the residue of that or whatever shows up enough on the seam of the baseball. Like, I don't think it's like they're not taking like a handful of gunk and the ball turns brown.
Right.
But like, so I don't know, like, is the answer for like every ball that comes out of play, like there to be an off field umpire examining the ball? I don't really know.
Well, see, these are the conversations you only have in baseball. Because again, like, you can't cheat like this in most other sports. Like, I just feel like,
yeah, I mean, look, in every
like football, sport, they deflate the ball or whatever. But like,
yeah, you in every sport, you can cheat with like performance enhancers and stuff like that. And like, obviously, Kawhi shot only went in because the magnets at Scotiabank Arena.
Absolutely.
So you could cheat a little bit, but yeah, you can't imagine it comes out that like in that one game against the Milwaukee Bucks, Fred had doctored the basketball, and that's why he was so That's why he was so hot shooting.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, use the wide receiver sticky stuff that they put on their receiving gloves.
Oh man, that's what Bismack Biyombo needed. Was just some just something to add to the grip.
Yeah, it's like that movie, that football movie, The Replacements, where the guy like can't let go of the ball because he's got too much sticky stuff on his hands.
Yeah, so I mean, look, I honestly, cheating makes it more interesting, you know. Shout out to Eddie Guerrero.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying. Yeah, lie, cheat, and steal. The old hit yourself with the chair when the referee's back's turned, so you went by disqualification. But no, like I do think there's like, I don't know if cheating is the right word, but there is stuff like this in other sports. Like it was only this year really that like the Gortat screen got outlawed. That's always been an illegal screen.
Right. Yeah,
but like. The guys got away with it.
Come on, that's like within the game, though. Like, this is different. Like,
I'm just saying, it's the same kind of thing. There's just in basketball, there's not the same access to like you can manipulate the tool of the sport all the time. Like, but like, I don't know. It's similar to like, is it all that different from the way Trae Young draws fouls?
Yeah, I mean, there's like playing the game, and I feel like
spiritually, it's not all that different, right?
That's true.
You're taking the rules. And the absolute extension of what's being allowed, and you're trying to nudge that as far as possible until the league cracks down on it.
No, I respect it. I like to look. Every single time I play a card game, I'm always trying to cheat. I always I know how to shuffle cards. I'm like pretty good with cards. So like, I always make myself the dealer. I always, you know, do some shuffle tricks, give myself an ace, whatever. You know, any game, man. But like.
Was it you that gave Assad those cards to screw me in the poker game?
Oh man, was that you?
Yeah, remember you
lost with like pocket Kawhi... rockets or something?
Yeah, I had pocket aces and he had 6-9 or offsuit or something like that, and he went in to be an idiot because it was 6-9, and then he ended up like Yeah, I think you hit a straight on the river or something like that.
Yeah,
and you put the Kawhi audio over it.
Yeah, with the four shots, with the corresponding with the river, the flop, and whatever. Yeah.
Well, I hate you.
Yeah. Well, listen, this is a pandemic, man. We got to get that back up. So, you know, that was like number one. That was the number one way I socialized was playing cards
for a couple weeks there.
Yeah. All right. Well, I said we weren't going to ramble, but then we rambled anyway. So, Blake, thanks.
Yeah, man.
For everything that you do. You know, anything you want people to look out for in the next like week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
Not the usual, man. I'm I don't know if I'm gonna write next week. I have maxed out my vacation time, so
wow.
Let's not talk. Well, we so, don't so even, talk so
even,
about that, so.
Even capitalism said, yeah. You gotta chill,
yeah.
Okay, all right,
but no, I've had some pre-draft stuff come out and it's fun, but like,
yeah.
You know, it is a little odd to have such a long off season.
Okay, let's say the Raptors stay at 7 or 8 or whatever in that range. Who are you going with?
My favorite guy in that range is Keon Johnson.
Keon Johnson, okay.
I'm higher on Keon Johnson than most, I think. I had him ahead of Kuminga on my like first board, so I had him at 5. But okay. I also like Keon Johnson and Kai Jones a lot because they're like projection picks to me. Like those are two guys that the chances of them failing is probably higher.
Okay.
But given the Raptors player development success, and especially with a guy with like Kai Jones and Keon Johnson's, like though that player archetype, the amount of success the Raptors have had developing those guys, I just think the ceiling on those guys is higher than the rest of that kind of third. Like there's, if you tier it Cade, Mobley, Jalen, maybe Kuminga, then that next year, I think Keon and Kai have kind of a higher ultimate ceiling. And at that point, like none of those guys are probably stepping in and making a huge impact day one. So swing for the fences. I'm always going to lean upside though. Fair like
enough. you guys drafted Roto 4 years in a row.
Yeah. Guys who are solid and can contribute, like Jakob Poeltl was a good pick at number 9. You could argue Sabonis or whatever, but I don't know if Sabonis and Siakam can kind of develop in the same role at the same time.
I mean, he would have been traded to San Antonio anyway. It wouldn't have made a difference, yeah.
Yeah, and so like a Poeltl pick is a good pick, and like it's really great to get a long-term useful guy at number 9, but like I don't know that a Jakob Poeltl changes your ceiling at any point during his career, right? So that's... You're the rare lottery pick you get as a team that wants to be good year over year. I'm looking for a ceiling raiser.
All right. The only thing I will counter is Scottie Barnes and OG Anunoby and Pascal on the wing together is kind of nasty.
I mean, you could throw Moses Moody in that Scottie Barnes thing too, but like there is not.
He's not as big, but he's not thick though. Like he's a
better shooter.
He is definitely a better shooter by a lot, actually. Yeah. But,
and like maybe he might be like the easiest projection 3-and-D guy. But yeah, I do.
He's Scotty like Mikal Bridges. Like it's
Scotty maybe, Barnes does seem very Raptors-y though.
That's what I'm saying. Like I really do feel like again, like, if you have those three guys on the wing at all,
take the things
nasty.
Nurse liked about McCaw and Stanley, and then it's like, but we're resetting the development clock that maybe they can be.
But he's 6'9" and has like a 7'2" wingspan. I don't know, man. These guys look ridiculous. Plus, people keep starting. They're bringing back the short shorts now, so everyone looks like a spider. Like. Anyway, sure. Yeah. Anyway, that's my draft analysis so far. Is that Scottie Barnes is terrifying defensively, possibly. Yeah.
You and Kareem, that's Kareem's guy too. So
I mean, it makes sense. Listen, he is a Raptor guy. Anyway,
he's very Raptorsy.
We'll have to call you again once we know what happens in the lottery.
No, give those reps to the real draft guys like Robel and
okay
those guys.
Yeah, there you go. So, all right, Blake, thanks for coming on. Follow Blake.
All right, buddy.
Blake Murphy, ODC, you know where Blake is. So, and then, yeah, for listeners to the podcast, going to have another podcast, just a Twitter mailbag probably on Sunday. So look out for questions then. And for now, thanks for listening. And yeah, listen back on Sunday.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.